Well, good morning, everybody. How you guys doing? 10:45. You doing good? Yeah. Hey guys, so my name is Jacob Sammons. I am the junior high director here at Reality Church. If you're new with us, welcome. We are so glad you joined us this week. We know you could have been a number of different places, but you chose to be here with us, and we're really honored by that, and we hope you enjoy your stay with us today. Guys, Overflow Weekend is this weekend. As you know, or as some of you know, this is our biggest youth event of the year, and it has been amazing. If you helped out with Overflow, thank you so much. I say that for both Jordy and myself. There's no way we could pull this event off without you guys helping, so good job. Thank you. Hey, so as I'm speaking today, if you guys have any questions, you can text Reality Church to 22333. Or if you have the mobile app, you can go into more. I think it's the first one, sermon polls and questions, and I will do my best to get those answered towards the end of the message here today. So guys, today is week three of our series, Love Can. And what this is it's part of a citywide movement called Within Reach, where we've basically, as churches in Omaha, we've said, you know what? Rather than trying to reach the city of Omaha on our own, we think that we could do a lot better if we worked together. So we've locked arms with about 35 to 40 churches in the area, and we think that if we do this, then the city of Omaha is within reach for the gospel. And so every year around Easter time, we have a sermon series that we all do together, and this year it's Love Can. In week one of this, we had a line up here, and we told you guys that love can help us cross the border from death to life. And we actually had you walk across that line and write your name at the bottom. And then last week, we talked about how love can define us. And we actually saw this in action, guys, as you guys sponsored 267 kids through Compassion International. That is unbelievable, guys. I'm pretty sure at some point this week, I heard that the previous record for a church was like 150. So you guys absolutely smashed that. And I would say that, you know, a lot of times we say it's not about the numbers, not about the record, but it kind of is. Because this is 267 kids across the world whose lives will never be the same because of what you guys did last week. And that's pretty crazy awesome. So guys, this week, I want to start us out by getting you to think about this real quick. Think about a time when you've lost something valuable to you. And then think about when you found it. And I want you to focus on when you found it. How did that make you feel? I know for me, usually when I lose something of value, it's gone forever. Like, it's gone. I don't find it. But I know that at one point in my life, I was the thing that was lost. I was about 3 years old, and my mom and I were walking into Walmart. And two things you need to know about me before the story goes any further is, one, I have always been and probably always will be a very independent soul. And so that means that basically, and I'm trying to get better at this, but I'll do what I want, when I want, try and stop me, you won't. Like, that's basically that. And it was especially strong when I was a toddler. And then the second thing is, I love sports. I do. And when I was a kid, anything sports related grabbed my attention. It was like a magnet. Bam, there I am. And so I'm 3 years old, we're walking into Walmart. And as we're walking in, I see this Brett Favre jersey in the clothing section. I'm like, whoa, a jersey at Walmart? They never have those here. I want to go check it out. So I asked my mom, hey, mom, can we go look at this thing? And she's like, yeah, when we're done. And so the whole rest of the time we're in Walmart, in typical three-year-old fashion, I'm sitting there bugging her, can we go now? Can we go now? Can we go now? And eventually, I just got tired of it. We were in the craft aisle. I don't even know why I remember that, but we were. And I remember thinking in my three-year-old mind, you know what? I'm bored. And I know where this thing's at. Besides, I'm three. I'm a big boy. I'm going to go check this thing out myself. So I waited for my moment. My mom turned to put something in the cart. And I was like, oh, here's my chance. I'm gone. I took off. Now, my mom, this is the best part, I think, anyways. My mom turns around to thank me for my patience. And, Jake, where'd you go? Well, he's three, so clearly he went to the toy aisle, right? No, that's not where I was going. So she goes to the toy aisle. I'm not there. So she tells a worker, hey, you know, I lost my three-year-old boy. Can you help me find him? And this was before the days of the electric doors. So, like, they actually went and locked the doors. Nobody was getting in or out of that Walmart until I was found. And sure enough, they found me in the clothes section. And I remember when my mom found me, she was mad. She was real mad. But she was also filled with joy. And she was celebrating the fact that her baby boy, who even for a few minutes was lost, but now she's found him. Oh, thank goodness you're safe. If you're a parent, you might know what that feels like. And this whole time, I had no clue she was looking for me. I probably didn't even care. I was on a mission, right? You see, my mom wouldn't hesitate until she found me. She wouldn't stop. She would not, well, did I say hesitate? No, I meant she would not rest until she found me. She would not rest until she found me. And it gets me thinking, what if God looks for you and I with that exact same laser focus that my mom had? What if God won't rest until he finds us? What if when he does find us, he celebrates? How would that change the way that we view God? How would that change things for us? Throughout his time on earth, Jesus actually talked about this very thing a lot, and he demonstrated it with his life, and even more so with his death. But there was one particular time where he's hanging out with these two very different groups of people. You got the Pharisees, who are the religious leaders, the teachers, the holy people, right? These guys are known to be holy. And at the same time, he's hanging out with the tax collectors. These are the notorious sinners, hated for their sin. And the Pharisees ask him, Jesus, why are you hanging out with these guys? I mean, you're one of us. You're a rabbi. You're a Pharisee. Why are you hanging out with these sinners? They're not even cool. Like, they steal money from people. Why are you hanging out with them? And so Jesus tells them three stories that kind of explain to them why he's hanging out with these tax collectors. And they illustrate also how God feels about those who are far from him. And so the first story he tells them is about this widow who loses this coin in her house. And she searches everywhere for it. Like, she tears her house apart looking for this one coin. And then he tells the story about a shepherd who has 100 sheep. And he loses one of them. And so he leaves the 99 behind to go find the one. And then he wraps it all up with a story that, if you've been in church for really any period of time, you've probably heard before. It's the story of the prodigal son. So if you have your Bibles or your devices, would you turn with me to Luke chapter 15, and we're going to start in verse 11. Verse 11. To illustrate this point further, Jesus told them this story. A man had two sons. The younger son told his father, I want my share of your estate now before you die. So his father agreed to divide his wealth between his sons. I want to pause for a second to help us just understand exactly what the son is saying here when he says, I want my share of the estate now. He's basically saying, Dad, you're dead to me. All you're worth to me is what I get when you die. I don't need you. I don't want you around. Just give me my inheritance now, and I'll be on my way. Make it easy for both of us. And let's just end this thing now, and I'll go on my way. And if you think that's crazy, the father actually agrees to this. It's like, yeah, okay. Parents, how would you feel if one of your kids came up to you and said, Mom, Dad, you're dead to me. Give me my inheritance now. If they were younger, I would bet that they just got themselves a date with their bedroom for about 6 months at least. Right? They're grounded. And if they're older, you're probably saying, hey, where's that will at again? Oh, yeah. And your name, cross that out. You just lost your inheritance, bud. Way to go. But no, this father, he agrees. He agrees. And so the story goes on. Verse 13. A few days later, this younger son packed all his belongings and moved to a distant land. And there he wasted all his money on wild living. So the son leaves his father's house. He's got this newfound fortune, right? Because he just got his inheritance. And in my mind, when it says wild living, he's not going there to start this like mission in Vegas, right? That's my mind, is he's going to Las Vegas because that's wild living. That's where people go to do wild living. So he's not going there to start this mission. He's not going there to start a business. He's not investing in the stocks. He's not doing anything that would be wise. No, he's doing what people do in Vegas. He's going to the casinos. He's hitting up the strip. He's living life to please him. Okay? And so eventually, he runs out of money, right? He didn't go out and get a job immediately, so he's running out of money. And at the same time, there's this famine in the land. And so there's not really a whole lot to go around. But he manages to get a job. It's not his dream job. It's a pretty stinky gig, really. He's feeding pigs. That's what he's doing. And it gets so bad that they actually have to put a stipulation on it. Hey, you can't eat what you're feeding the pigs. Like he would want to. This stuff is gross. It's probably slop. Who knows what's in this? It probably smells terrible. But the son is sitting here feeding the pigs and he's thinking, if I could just get a bite. But no, I can't. This younger son, he's on rock bottom. He's got nowhere else to go. He's got no money. He's in a distant land. He doesn't know many people. His job is terrible. And it's in this moment that he has a thought. Verse 17. When he finally came to his senses, he said to himself, at home, even the hired servants have food enough to spare. Here I am dying of hunger. Basically, what am I doing? I will go home to my father and say, Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son. Please, take me on as a hired servant. So I want you to put yourself in this son's shoes for a second. Here you are. You've disowned your father. You've abandoned him. You've wasted half of his life's earnings. And now you find yourself standing before him. No doubt nervous, aware that you don't deserve to be right here, right now, let alone his son. You don't really know how he's going to respond to you. He could give you the silent treatment. He could just completely ignore you. He could tell you, I told you so. You don't know. But what he does, you are not expecting. So here you are, and I want to go back to what the father, well, hold on, no, I want to do this first. Hey, so he's got this speech going, right? He's like, I know what I'll do. I'll go back to my dad's house. Okay, I'll go back to my dad's house, and I'll tell him, you know what? Your hired servants, you have it good. They have it good. I know I can't be your son. I blew that a long time ago, right? I blew that big time. I blew it when I wasted your fortune. I blew it when I said you were dead to me. No way. But I'm going to go back to dad's house and try and be a servant. And so he gets this speech, Father, I've sinned against heaven and you. And as he's coming, the father interrupts him. Here's what he says, verse 22. But his father said to the servant, quick, bring the finest robe in the house and put it on him. Get a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet and kill the calf we have been fattening. We must celebrate with a feast, for this son of mine was dead and has returned to life. He was lost, but now he is found, and so the party began. This is where I want you to put yourself in the son's shoes. Okay? So here you are. You've wasted your father's fortune. You've disowned him. You've abandoned him. And you're not expecting him to even come out to meet you or even talk to you. He doesn't need to do that. You have been terrible to him. But you came back and you got the speech. And as you're about to give it, he cuts you off and he says, son, you're home. Quick, put on this robe. We're going to throw a party. A party? I don't deserve a party. I wasted half of your life's earnings. I have been so terrible to you. You're going to throw me a party? You see, the son had this in his mind that sonship or daughterhood was about his worth. He says, I'm no longer worthy to be your son. He assumes that it was about him. And he also severely underestimated how good the father was. And so, this father, no, he throws a party for his son. And parents, you guys know your kids, they're not your kids because they're worth it. Nobody's that awesome, right? Nobody's that awesome. I'm definitely not that awesome. If childhood was, if being a son or a daughter of somebody was something that we were because we were worth it, then nobody would have kids. We're just not that cool. And so this dad throws a party for his son. Even after he had wasted his fortune. But you remember at the beginning of the story, there was two sons. And so this is where we meet the older brother. Verse 25, meanwhile, the older son was in the fields working. When he returned home, he heard music and dancing in the house, and he asked one of the servants what was going on. Your brother is back, he was told, and your father has killed the fattened calf. We are celebrating because of his safe return. And so I imagine this in our 21st century world. Basically, the older brother, he's been out in the fields working all day, and he's coming in, he's taking off his work gloves and kicking off his boots, and he hears music, and he's like, I wonder what that's about. And right about that time, the servant comes out, he's got a plate of cake and maybe a side of beef because they just killed the fattened calf. We'll just call it a beefcake, all right? And he's got this cup of lemonade, and he's got a big old smile on his face. He's been having a fun time. And the older son's like, what's going on in there? What's that all about? And the servant's just nonchalant, like, oh, your brother came back. Dad threw him a party. It's a real rager. You should go check it out, man. It's awesome. And the older brother's like, I'm not going in there. Are you kidding me? No way. Verse 28, the older brother was angry and wouldn't go in. His father came out and begged him, but he replied, all these years I've slaved for you and never once refused to do a single thing you told me to. And in all that time, you never gave me even one young goat for a feast with my friends. Yet when this son of yours comes back after squandering your money on prostitutes, again, he's assuming there, didn't actually tell us what he wasted his money on, you celebrate by killing the fattened calf. So we have an angry brother. And honestly, it's easy to be hard on him here. You should celebrate your brother's return. You should be happy for him. He's back, man. Go hang out with him. And the little brother's like, no, I'm not going to go hang out with him. Here's the deal. I have been here the whole time. I've been perfect. I've never not done something you asked me to do. I've been faithful. I didn't waste anything. I work and work and work for you. And this loser comes in after wasting all of your money, sinning, no doubt, and you throw him a party? Where's my party at? Hey, I've been here the whole time. And then we get this beautiful and wise response from the father. I absolutely love this. Verse 31. His father said to him, look, dear son, you've always stayed by me, and everything I have is yours. We had to celebrate this happy day, for your brother was dead and has come back to life. He was lost, now he is found. I imagine the father coming up to his son who's definitely mad. He puts his arm around him. He's, son, you're right. You've been a good son. You've been faithful. You've worked hard. You've been here the whole time. I have no complaints. You've been a really good son. But this brother of yours, I had no idea where he was at. I was worried sick. And now he's back. I had no choice but to celebrate this. And right about here, you may be wondering, okay, you know, that's a cool story. I know you messed up a little bit, but it's okay. And that's a good story, but it's a little long. And what exactly do you want me to do about this? Why are you telling me this story, Jake? And, well, I'm glad you asked. You see, this story is a parable. So Jesus is giving us a picture of a heavenly truth. And so I'm going to assign one role, and it's going to be to the Father. That's God. Can we all agree on that? That's God, okay? And so what I'm going to say is, and this is the big, if you don't get anything else today, this is what I want you to get, that God's love can set us free to celebrate. And I think there's two ways that this works itself out. The first is, maybe you're in here, and for our story's sake, you identify more with the younger brother, right? Maybe you've been in church for a while, maybe even your whole life. You've been in the Father's house, or no. Yeah, that's right. Younger brother. Maybe you were in church for a while at one point, and you left. At one point, you thought, you know what? I don't need this. I don't need this. I don't get this. This doesn't make sense to me. I'm going to take my stuff and go on my own way. And like the younger brother, you had no idea where that would lead you. And now here you are. You're on rock bottom. You got nowhere else to go. I don't know what that looks like for you. But here you are. And you had a thought, you know, you're like, you know what? I know what I'll do. I'll go back to church. I'll sit in the back row. I don't expect God to welcome me in. I don't expect him to put me to use. And if he does, well, it'll probably be just to work off all of my sins. And I'm okay with that, honestly. I feel like I deserve that. But I'll just go back to church. I'll sit in the back. And you don't expect him to welcome you, and you don't expect him to call you son or daughter, and you definitely don't expect a party. Like the younger brother here, your self-assessment is spot on. Honestly, it's the same for all of us. There's not a single person in this room, not Lance, not me, not Travis or Jordy or Robert, not anybody in this room in the chairs here that is more worthy than the next of God's grace. Not a single one. But also like the younger brother, if this is you, your view of the Father is off. You see, because you're coming back, and while you're still a ways off, he sees you coming. He sees you coming, and you're starting your speech, Father, I've sinned against you. Father, I'm not worthy to be your son. And he stops you. He just stops you. My son, my daughter, you're back. I've been waiting so long for this. I can't believe it's finally here. Quick, put on this robe. Quick, put on this ring. We're going to come inside. We're going to have a party. We're going to have a party. And if that's where you find yourself this morning, you know, it can be really easy to push back against that, to resist that act of grace. No, you can't possibly throw me a party. I don't deserve that. But if that's you, I want to challenge you to, instead of resisting it, to just receive God's grace. Receive it. And let him change you through it, because he will. There's a second side of this, though. Maybe you identify more with the older brother here. And you've been in church your whole life. You never left. You've been faithful. Maybe you served in church. Whatever it is. And whenever somebody who's been far from the Father's house comes in, you welcome them in. You celebrate that as you should. But maybe it's different when somebody who was once in the Father's house and then left for a little while, and now they're trying to come back, and they're in the house dancing, and you're like, what are you doing? Why are you dancing? You need to sit down and think about what you've done, you sinner. I'm glad you enjoyed that. And if that's you, if that's ever been you, and honestly, it's been me, here's the challenge I have for you. Stop comparing your good deeds to the sins of others and enjoy his grace. Here's the deal. Like I said earlier, there's not a single person in this room that is more worthy of God's grace than the next. In the scriptures, it says that the wages of sin is death. That means that when we sin against God, and everybody has done that, by the way, that we rack up this debt towards God. And the only way to pay that debt is that somebody has to die. And that's terrible news for us, unless somebody comes and pays that price for us. And so we have Jesus, right? The Son of God coming into our world, living a perfect life. Jesus never sinned, and dying this gruesome, horrifying death on a cross. And when he did that, he took care of the debt that you racked up, the debt that I racked up, so that we could be reconciled or made right with the Father. His love has moved us from rebellion to reconciliation. But it doesn't stop there. You see, because in I believe it's Romans or maybe Ephesians, Paul talks about how when you believe in Jesus, when you place your faith in him, which by the way is the only way to be made right with God, so if you're trying a different way, you should stop because it's not working and it won't work. But when you place your faith in Jesus, it says that God the Father adopts you into his family. You're no longer some stranger in a distant land. You are son. You are daughter. His love has moved us from religion, that is trying to work to get right with God, to relationship. We are sons. We are daughters. And that is definitely worth celebrating. So guys, I'm going to open it up for some questions here. See what you guys got for me. That's a great question. Did I get the Brett Favre jersey? No, actually it was in a men's size, so it was way too big for me. When people think of church, they tend to think of the older brother, not the father. How do we change that? Wow, that is a great question. I think the answer of that is that I think the way that we do this is by putting off that older brother attitude, right? Sometimes we have this attitude of, you know, we're better because we're church people and we're saved, but that's not the case. And instead, I think if we could get the heart of the Father, that these people that are out in our city right now, those are people who God dearly loves. If we could get that, and the fact that they're sons and daughters, they just need to be brought home. I think that could change a lot. I hope that answers that question. But I think it's an attitude change. How far can a person go from God and still get welcomed home? Another great question. We had a question just like it at the 9 o'clock. I think that the answer to this is, I don't even know how to say that, but I don't know that there is a place where you're too far, right? Because God sent his son, like this is a big deal, to die for you, so that your whole debt, the whole thing, is wiped clean. So I don't know that I don't think there's a level of, oh, that's too much. I don't think that's a thing at all. So I would say a person cannot go too far to not still be welcomed home when he turns to the Father. Next question. Have you ever been like the prodigal? I have. So I actually grew up in a Christian home. And when I was about 14, my dad passed away and I completely rebelled against God. I did my own thing for a while, sex, drugs, you name it. And about, it was 3 or 4 years ago, some crazy stuff God was working through my life that just flipped that on its head. And now I'm working at a church, so it's been pretty crazy, yeah. Yeah, thank you. Is there a limit to God's love for us? How do I change the way I think about God? I have a tendency to think that God can't celebrate me. Okay, first off, on this part right here, this first question, is there a limit to God's love for us? No. No, absolutely not. How do I change the way I think about God? I have a tendency to think he can't celebrate me. I think a couple of ways to do this would be, one, pray. You know, read the scriptures, see how he feels about you, but pray. And ask him to reveal himself to you and to show you how he feels about you and to give you his eyes in that. I know that this, is for me, was hard for a long time. You know, I like the younger son, I had wasted a lot of years and sinned a lot, and just having that, like, that thought of, you know, how could God celebrate somebody like me? But the thing is that he does, and so it just took, for me, it took a lot of time of just praying and seeking out God and asking him to reveal himself to me. So it looks like that's all we got. So great questions, guys. You know, I think that this thing is something that Reality Church does really well, this whole celebrating others. I think it is something we do really good. I sit in the back a lot, and I watch you guys, as people are getting baptized every third Sunday, I watch you guys go nuts about that, and it warms my heart. I love it every time, but let's not leave our celebration here. Let's take it to Monday and to Tuesday and Wednesday and the rest of the days of the week. And let's be a church that celebrates everybody. Think about the people you know who don't know Jesus. They're far from him. Or even the people you know that are in this room. Do they know that God loves them? Do they know that they have a place in the Father's house? And if they did, how could that change things for them? What if they knew that they were worth celebrating? What if they knew they didn't have to pick themselves up and clean themselves off, but that the Father welcomes them in? How could that change things for them? So part of the sermon series, Love Can, we want to do a million acts of love. And we haven't actually talked to you guys too much about this here. But the idea is that if everybody in every church that's part of this movement does one act of love a day, then we can reach a million. And we can put a dent in Omaha for the gospel, or at the very least get people second guessing, like, maybe there's something to this whole Christianity thing. And so I want to get you guys started on that this week, because one of the ways that you can love people is by celebrating them. So as you leave, your ushers are going to hand you a stack of about 7 cards. And what they are is they say Love Can on the front and they're blank on the back. And what I want you to do is every day this week, pick a different person, find something worth celebrating in that person, write it on the back of that card, and give it to that person. And let's continue being a church that is known for celebrating people, both here and people out there. Guys, will you join me in seeing what love can do when we choose to celebrate one another?